Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted to have you on board with us today as we face the issues. We're talking with Representative Mike Hill, District 1, State of Florida, and we also have a caller on the line. We've had a dialogue and discussion taking place thus far today in relationship to Christians being involved in the political agenda and what are some of the things that we're dealing with in the state of Florida in particular. Congressman, if you would, you touched on it a couple of times, and for the benefit of our telephone call listener, if he wants to continue to join in the dialogue and discussion, but I'd like for you to talk with us about the parental consent bill and what that means and why is that so important for us in the state of Florida.
Yes, sir, Dr. Youngblood. The parental consent bill, briefly, says that before a child under the age of 18 can have an abortion, they must have written consent from at least one of the parents. Now, current law says that a parent only needs to be notified. The problem with that is sometimes the parents were notified after the abortion was taking place. But what this does is before the abortion can take place, a parent must give their written consent. Now, this bill really has some further ramifications than just that on the surface, and this is what I mean by that. That bill is going to affect about 1,700 babies a year who will not be aborted. That's what it's been estimated. That's not a big number when you consider 70,000 a year are now aborted in Florida who are murdered in the womb.
At the tone,
now, what this
please.
Bill does is language in this bill is going to directly challenge a flawed Florida Supreme Court decision made in 1989, I believe it was, which says because of Florida's privacy clause in our Constitution, a woman has a right to abort that baby in her body. Well, language in this bill is going to directly challenge that flawed opinion, which, by the way, should not have become law. Only the legislative branch has the authority to make law. The judicial branch can give their opinion, but that's it. Only their opinion. They cannot make law themselves. But our judicial system has become such out of whack because of how they teach them in law school that they do indeed can make an opinion, and it all of a sudden becomes legal precedent and law, which is wrong. But at any rate, the parental consent bill is going to challenge that decision. Now, when it challenges that, that's going to lay the groundwork for the heartbeat bill to now be able to be passed. Because once we get that ruling out of the way, the heartbeat bill can now go through. And a heartbeat bill, as you know, Dr. Youngblood, says once a heartbeat is detected in that womb, then that baby cannot be aborted.
Yes. In fact, this parental consent bill is... the dual bill is the Senate Bill 404, and what is the matching bill in the House, Congressman?
It's being run by Representative Grawl, and I'll have to admit I don't have that House bill number with me right now, but I can look it up very quickly, and I can get that for you.
That's Senator Stargell that's on the Senate side that's running that bill, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yes.
Senator Stargell is running it there, and on the House side, it is Representative Grawl who is running that bill, which, by the way, I have also co-sponsored that bill, and I'm supporting it. Even though I don't believe it goes far enough to stop abortion in Florida, it is a step in the right direction, and I'm always going to support anything that's going to do that.
Yes, I'm looking at it now. It's House Bill 265 in the Senate side. It's 11-page bill, Senate Bill 404. But I am thankful that you're sponsoring that bill. And could you briefly, and I don't want to take too much time on this because we've got several others we want to talk about, what are the committee standings on that? Has it gone through more than one committee? Is it locked up in committee? Is it moving through the committees? What is the status of it?
Well, right now the status is it is ready to be heard on the House floor.
That's good.
Yes, it had three committee stops over on the Senate side, and it passed all. largely along party lines. It had one committee stop on the House side, and it passed there also along party lines. It is now ready for the floor. And as I said earlier, the House is taking up the Senate version of that bill.
Very good. Let me remind our listeners, the telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. If you'd like to dialogue and discuss any of these issues with us today, we're talking with Representative Mike Hill, District 1, the State of Florida House of Representatives. We're delighted that our congressman can be on the interview with us today. Let me remind our listeners also, Congressman, when we talk about district, you're elected in District 1. I understand that. But what listeners and many of our folks today do not understand is once you're elected, you represent all of the state of Florida, for example, not just your district. And a good example of that I have been brought as full to our attention recently, when we watched the attempt to impeach our president, it took all of those senators from representative seats across America that voted in tandem together to do what was right and to acquit the president. So when we have bills, even though it might be introduced by one particular district representative, when we have bills that come to the floor to be voted on, each representative, each senator, and each representative, each congressman has the responsibility of voting what is right for our state and for what is right for the constituents in that particular district. So I'm thankful for what you're doing. Let's talk about something else that is very dear to me. We've talked about this before. There's a major move in Tallahassee that I believe, if it redounds to some of the issues and winds up being voted on with some of these bills, there's about 40 gun bills that are on the and the hopper, as I call it. For example, the assault weapons bill, the 10-round limit of magazine capacity, universal background check, the end of private gun sales, the revision of the concealed carry weapons permit, enhancement of the red flag law requiring background checks to purchase ammunition, mental health review prior to obtaining a concealed carry permit, prevention of constitutional carry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Speak to that issue, Congressman. What are some of the most staring, glaring, problematic bills that you see in Tallahassee when it comes to the infringement on our Second Amendment rights?
Well, what I will say is the vast majority, in fact, about 99% of those bills which are trying to infringe on our Second Amendment rights are being proposed by the Democrats. The good news about that is that it's unlikely that they'll even get a committee hearing, much less that they will pass and get to the floor. And should they get a committee hearing, because we have a majority of Republicans in the House and on the Senate side, it would likely fail. That's why it is so important, Dr. Youngblood, for Christians to get out and vote when it comes time to vote. When Christians vote, the conservative side wins. Yes. And as you say, even though I represent Pensacola, the decisions I make affect the entire state.
Yes.
And so because we have a majority of Republicans in the House and the Senate, we can defeat all of those gun measures. Now, I must add that there is one that I'm very concerned about that is being passed or being proposed by Republicans over on the Senate side. And it's an initiative by the Senate President, Bill Galvano, who wants to expand Florida's red flag law. Florida's red flag law is a gun confiscation law that was passed shortly after the Parkland shooting, which says that if someone is being accused of being mentally unstable or a danger to themselves or others, they can have their weapons and their ammunition confiscated from them. And since that was signed into law back in 2018, more than 2,600 Floridians have had their constitutional rights taken away from them and their guns and their weapons confiscated. Well, as the bill was written and signed into law, it would allow immediate family members to make those accusations to have, amongst others, to have your weapon confiscated. what the Senate president wants to do is expand who can make those accusations. It could be from a significant other, a boyfriend or girlfriend. It could be from law enforcement itself, which it already is, but it could also be from others, coworkers, who are concerned about this person. And that is a very dangerous precedent to set. Fortunately, it doesn't look like it has a lot of traction over on the House side, but over on the Senate side, it was moving. And the last that I heard, I believe it's in a committee stop now. Hopefully, it's going to get stopped before it can get to the Senate floor, and then hopefully it will be stopped once it gets to the floor.
Well, explain to our listeners, Congressman Hill, the process of what we're referring to as the red flag law. What I have discovered in my communication individually and with individuals privately and from public communication about the red flag laws, I discovered that most people think that red flag laws, that's good. It keeps the guns out of the hands of bad people, and it protects us, we the citizens. Explain the process and what the red flag law does, not down into the minutiae of it, but generally the overview of how that is, what is triggered in the red flag law that allows them to come and confiscate the weapon.
Well, essentially what it does is it infringes upon our constitutional rights in several ways. Someone could be become irate, angry, and say some things that out of anger perhaps they wouldn't have. And if someone feels threatened by that, another person feels threatened by that, such as a family member, that, hey, this person is acting very dangerously, they might harm themselves, they might harm someone else, they can call law enforcement. Law enforcement can then take the case to a judge and say, hey, judge, this is a situation. The judge says, yep, go confiscate it. What we have seen is that in some counties in Florida is much worse than in others. In my county, Escambia County, you don't see that many instances. But in other counties like Polk County, the judge they take it to has been almost 90% of the time has been saying, yes, go confiscate the weapon and the ammunition. So they come to your house and will physically enter your house and demand to have all of your weapons and your ammunition. You can either cooperate or not. They will take it. And they know how many weapons you have because you have to register them when you go purchase a weapon. That's why the NRA was so adamant of being against gun registration. But at any rate, they'll come in your house and they will take it. You must now petition to get your gun back. You have to prove to the court that you're not a dangerous person. And, oh, by the way, you have to pay for your own lawyer. So it reverses our whole concept of due process that you are innocent until proven guilty. What the red flag law, the gun confiscation law, says, you are guilty until you prove your own innocence. It's not where the government has to prove your guilt, which is the way it should be. It's you as a private citizen, you have to prove to the government that you are innocent, which is so egregious, and it goes completely against everything that we stand for as a constitutional republic.
Absolutely. It counters everything that we have in the Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, 14th Amendment, and yet I find that good people, in fact, I've talked with a number of your constituents there in Tallahassee, and what I have found to my shock is that so many of them believe that expansion of the red flag law will be good. And that's what frightens me, is the realization that so many of our representatives and senators do not recognize the far-reaching implications of the expansion of this. Bad enough to have it. I believe, in fact, you had introduced a bill. Was it House Bill 6003 that would basically negate that red flag law?
That's correct. It would repeal it altogether. Not only the red flag law, but other portions of that Parkland bill, which says that an 18 to 20-year-old can't purchase a long gun. That is completely unconstitutional. So it would repeal that. It would also repeal the three-day waiting period that was illegally signed into law, and would also repeal that a bump stock could not be bought or sold in Florida. Now, the problem I had with that portion of it is the definition for a bump stock was so broad that any modification you would make to your weapon, a liberal judge could say, call it a bump stock, and then confiscate your weapon. So House Bill 6003 repeals all of that. It hasn't gotten a hearing this session, but I will continue to place that bill forward. And as I said earlier, Dr. Youngblood, it's because of my oath of office. When I said an oath to God that I'm going to protect our Constitution, when I see it being infringed upon in such an egregious manner, I am duty-bound to file legislation to protect it.
Yes. In fact, let's switch gears just one moment. And I believe there's is it House Bill 3 that's supposed to be protection of Christian businesses in Florida? Are you familiar with that?
House Bill 3, let me look it up here real quick, because oftentimes I can go by the that's for occupational licensing.
Right.
And the intent of that bill is to allow more people to work in Florida. In other words, right now, there are so many rules that are placed upon people who want to do very simple things, such as braid hair or become an interior decorator, that hours of time, course hours, are placed upon them before they can receive their license. And then you have to pay the state. So, for example, I think hair braiding has 240 hours of classroom time you must take and pass a state exam before you can braid someone's hair, which is crazy. Same thing with interior decorators. So the intent of that bill is to remove those unnecessary occupational licensing requirements so that people can start a business and can go to work.
One of the things that, Congressman, that I read in that bill, let me just read you a brief wording. Before preemption of conditions of employment and preemption of occupational license would make it impossible for local government to place restrictions or requirements on employers or businesses relating to sexual orientation and gender identity protections. As I read the terminology in the bill, Congressman, it seems to be saying that it would give protection to the Christian businesses, in particular, what it called today the Sochi laws, that would put them in the bullseye if they say, I'm baking a cake, but I don't want to do it for a homosexual wedding, or I'm preparing flowers, but I don't want to do it for a homosexual wedding, that it would protect them on that basis. That was my serious interest in it. The preemption occupational license, as it is called, supposedly, with that, and maybe that subsection in it may have been taken out by now in the committees, but I was encouraged by that potentiality in relationship to it. Now, the House Bill 305, preemption of conditions of employment, is a totally separate bill from House Bill 3 and what it will do in that realm. But by the way, I believe we have a call on the line. Go with your question or comment, please.
May I remind you that it was a so-called conservative Republican governor, Rick Scott, and a so-called conservative Republican legislature that has given us this awful red flag law. You know, I would have expected this from Charlie Crist and Democrats like State Senator Lauren Book from Miami. You know, all these conservative Republicans who think Rick Scott is so damn wonderful, I don't know what they're thinking of. Now, Mr. Youngblood, having said that, I have a more important question for you. Over the weekend, sir, what happened to the flag?
The flag?
At 295 at Tools for Time.
That was taken down to keep the hurricane force winds from ripping it up, I think, which was
good. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's about a $5,000 flag, so I think that anytime there's heavy wind, they take it down to salvage it.
Okay. Have
Very
a good,
good
day, sir.
Great. Thank you so much for your call. Congressman Hill, I believe that though it was a little pointed, I believe that's correct, that the red flag law that we have for the state of Florida was put in by Republicans, signed in by Governor Scott. That doesn't make it good or doesn't authorize it from my perspective, but I'm thankful that you and others see the danger of it and are willing to work toward having it removed, and I'm thankful for that. But there's a couple of other important bills that's working their way through the House and the Senate that I am interested in and would like to have your comments on. It's called the Healthy Marriage Bill, and then we want to talk about that and the vaping bill and any others that you think that our listeners need to be aware of and to be prayerful of in their passing. Just give us your thoughts on those.
Yes, the Healthy Marriage Bill came before a committee that I sit on last week, and I support that bill 100%. What it says is that when someone goes to obtain their marriage license, they are given a handbook which will describe to them certain things which could help their marriage last and be better. The handbook is nonpartisan. It is not religious. But it does contain certain consultative-type language which will help a young family that's getting married to make their marriage even better, things to consider that will help their marriage. I think it's a great handbook. It was put together by the Florida Family Research Council, and it's been years in trying to get this even introduced and given a hearing, and it is moving this year in the House, and I believe it's going to pass until we get it to the floor, and I believe it's going to pass on the floor also. I'll have to admit I'm not sure where it is over on the Senate side right now, but I think it is a great step in wanting to try and keep the God-instituted family intact. Right now, our families are under attack. Divorce is rampant, and we must do something to try and turn that around because the family is the bedrock and structure of our entire society.
Yes, I am thankful for that. We'll be praying for that bill and others. There's another bill that catches my eye. It's House Bill 1365 called the Vulnerable Child Protection Act. Are you familiar with that? And would you like to discuss that for our listeners' benefit today?
Yes, and I'm a co-sponsor of that bill also. And essentially what it says is that a child, a minor, cannot have a sex change operation, period. Under penalty, a doctor who performs that would be under penalty and could be prosecuted for performing that. Now, I got a call from a local liberal newspaper, local as in Pensacola, saying that why was I co-sponsoring an anti-LGBTQ bill?
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised, and I said, what anti-LGBTQ bill? And they said House Bill 1365, which prevents a child from having a sex change operation. And I said, I didn't know that that was anti-LGBTQ. I thought and I believe and know that it is pro-child, that we are protecting children. Children are young. They're impressionable. Their minds are still developing, and they can become confused at times. And so instead of, when they're in that confused state, to make a permanent life-changing alteration to their body should not be permitted. Now, once they become an adult, okay, then you go ahead and continue making your own decisions. But as a child, no, we are not going to allow that. And the irony behind it all, Dr. Youngblood, this is a great bill that protects children.
Yes.
In California, they have prohibited where you can counsel a child who is confused. They have gender dysphoria, and they're confused. In California, they won't even let you counsel the child to have them walk through what's happening in their mind and with their bodies to help them come to a conclusion. You can't even do that in California. But here in Florida, we are saying that Yes, you can counsel them, but also you are not going to make a permanent change to their body. You're not going to mutilate their body. That we come under attack for that, which is doesn't even make sense.
Well, that attack indicates that you're on the right track with that, because this, as you know, is Congressman, is taking place across America. There's a case now in, I believe it's the state of Texas, where a mother, it's a divorced family, and a mother started the process of having her seven-year-old son go through the what is called the transition, and the father stepped in, and the courts now have thus far in three different court cases, they've ruled that the mother cannot have the orientation changed or the sexual identity changed of that seven-year-old boy, that she was wanting to transition into a girl because he felt that he was feminine, and she was going to take that from a seven-year-old child to make that determination. So I commend you and those that will vote with you on the Vulnerable Child Protection Act, House Bill 1365. And I want to step in and say this to all of our listeners. I would encourage you to call Tallahassee. Talk with your representative, talk with any of the representatives, your representative in particular, and with the senators, and say, please, please, please pass, please support House Bill 1365 that's now in the hopper, as I call it, to be voted on. So I pray that that will pass. Congressman, we've got about 2 minutes left in the broadcast today, but there's the vaping bill that is still working its way through the House and the Senate. What's the status of that?
I'll have to admit, Dr. Youngblood, I'm not familiar with that one. I haven't kept up with it too much. I know what the vaping bill intent was, to keep it away from minors. And I know that they're also looking at removing certain flavors from the vaping bills. My take on that is, yes, I support keeping vaping away from minors. It's being learned how dangerous that is to the development of their lungs, and they're getting diseases. But I'll have to say that when it comes to removing flavors, that if adults want to choose certain flavors, then I believe they should have the right to choose that, and government can't tell them that they can't.
Very good. Well, I'm thankful for that. Congressman, let's take the last 30 seconds we have. Let our listeners know how they can reach you by your website, your email address, that they can support and stand with you on the bills and these issues that we've talked about that are so valuable in our society today.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Youngblood. They can reach me at my legislative office at mike.hill@myfloridahouse.gov, all spelled out, mike.hill@myfloridahouse.gov. Or they can reach me in another way. Go to my website, votemikehill.com, and they reach out to me. I always respond.
Very good. We're looking forward to that. And for our listeners, I encourage you to give prayerful consideration of being involved in Mike Hill, saying yes to him and saying yes to what God would have him to do, praying for him each day for his support, for his encouragement, and his protection as he continues to serve us here in the state of Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to the next time on the air when, once again, we can face the issues.
Wednesday Fellowship Meal Bible Study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.